We shall move to the next case of the day. The next case is number 054295, the United States against Miller.
May it please the court. My name is Rick Code. I'm from the Federal Defender Services of Wisconsin. I represent the appellant, Todd Miller. In this case, the government's conduct poisoned the sentencing process. Its refusal to consider a 5K1.1 motion was in bad faith and lacked a rational relationship to a legitimate government interest for two main reasons. First, when the government asserted at sentencing that its reason for not considering a 5K1.1 was Miller's untruthfulness during his debriefing, it did not disclose that the same officer it relied on for that opinion, exclusively relied on for that opinion, because the U.S. Attorney, Assistant United States Attorney, was not present at the debriefing. That same officer attested to Miller's truthfulness in state court in an affidavit in support of a search warrant
Why isn't it possible for both of those things to be true? I don't think the Assistant U.S. Attorney was saying that what Mr. Miller said about the marijuana growing operations was untruthful, but when asked about his own source of the cocaine, he was, in the view of the government anyway, so they represent, not forthcoming. And so it's not at all uncommon for people to be more willing to talk about things that are a little further removed from their own circumstance. So I'm not sure that I see such an inherent conflict, and it's certainly usually the case with these cooperation motions that the government really insists on comprehensive cooperation.
I think they do, but I think the issue, as I see it, is that in state court, the officer in a search warrant affidavit in general attested to Miller's truthfulness. And I don't think that those two representations are consistent then. He's either truthful or he's not. I don't know that the government...
You mean in all things he's truthful?
Yeah.
Once you tell the truth, you're presumed to be telling the truth forever?
No, but I think in the context of his debriefing and his information that he gave to the government...
He said he was truthful insofar as he went.
I'm sorry?
Truthful insofar as he went might be an appropriate way of putting it.
But I think that
the discretion is entirely with the government, wasn't it, under the plea agreement?
Yes, it was.
And what do we do with that? They exercise their discretion, even if it's wrong.
Well, I think that they made a promise in the plea agreement. They promised.
The promise was to exercise their discretion.
Which, in my mind, and in Miller's mind, means that they would at least consider his cooperation.
Did. They did. He said that he was lying. Or he hadn't been candid.
Judge, I would disagree. I think that AUSA Washington at the sentencing stated very clearly that the decision whether or not to grant the motion was not made in a formal context, that his office did not consider it, and that he never represented that we would move for one. I think that's inconsistent with the plea agreement language, which is at least, I think, to consider it.
But who has to consider? I mean, I guess the process that the AUSA is describing is one where the initial call is made by the prosecuting attorney, and if he wants to take it up the chain, then he'll do it. But Mr. Washington decided right at the threshold, since Miller hadn't been forthcoming about the source of some guy named Mike or whatever he said, hadn't been forthcoming about the source of the cocaine, that it wasn't worth going further. But I'm not sure that's the same as no consideration. It just means it stops at a lower level.
I think relevant to that question is the Eastern District of Wisconsin U.S. Attorney's Manual. I think Mr. Gianpetro might be able to comment on this more. Says that if an AUSA wants to grant the motion, and this is sort of the opposite, but if an AUSA wants to grant the motion, it must go to the committee. And I think that in this case...
That wouldn't bind the court, would it?
I'm sorry?
That wouldn't bind the court, though, would it? Internal operations of the office are a matter of virtually no significance at all to the court itself.
I think it's significant in that, within the context of the argument, Miller doesn't believe that his cooperation was even considered. And that was in a promise, in a plea agreement, and therefore that promise is before the court. And I think then that it is relevant how the government went about considering whether or not to grant a motion.
I thought it was possible that your argument, although you can correct me if I'm wrong, was more that he promised to cooperate with them and indeed did and helped them make these various arrests. And he himself hadn't promised anymore. I mean, I guess that the scope of the promise is what doesn't seem to be as clear as it should be. The government understood that to be, you'll cooperate with us with respect to anything we ask you. And he was looking, in a sense, at the other end of the telescope and saying, well, I did give you a fair amount, even if I didn't give you everything. Is that a fair description of
I think it's fair.
Between the parties?
I think that that's potentially fair. I think that you can look at his cooperation and clearly see that he provided something of value to the government.
He did.
And their assertion that...
Right, he provided something of value. It's just he didn't provide everything of value. And that's where the... I think the difference lies. The government didn't think it had to go forward with the 5K 1.1 motion until it was really satisfied that everything was on the table, whereas he thought, hey, I've given you some really valuable things. That should be enough.
Well, I think in Miller's mind, and I think in the government's mind, the cooperation was complete. There wasn't any... Miller actually, I think I wrote in my brief... wanted to continue to provide active cooperation, and the government indicated that it was done with Mr. Miller.
Okay.
I think what I'm asking the court to do today, as the district court stated in its order denying my motion to supplement the record, is that to the extent that the affidavit demonstrates an inconsistency with the government's position at the time of sentencing, it may warrant further action by the district court. And I think at the very least, the district court should be allowed to examine this information that it didn't have at the time of sentencing to determine whether it does affect the court's determination as far as substantial assistance. And I think at the very least, that's what I'm asking the court to do today. If the court has no further questions, I think that's it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Again, now for Mr. Giampetro.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Gordon Giampetro. I represent the United States. The defendant indicates in his briefs that he's not challenging his conviction and he's not challenging the reasonableness of his sentence. And so the obvious question is, what are we doing here today on this appeal? To be fair, I think he doesn't really mean he's not challenging the reasonableness of sentence. I think what he means is his sentence should be lower because the government should be forced to file a 5K motion. And I want to go right to the remedy that he's seeking. He asks one of two things, the government be forced to file a motion, or in the alternative, that there be an evidentiary hearing. I think with respect to the first request, although the United States continues to believe post-Booker that a government motion is required if there's going to be a 5K 1.1 departure, as a practical matter, judges have been, as part of their Booker 3553A analysis, considering cooperation as part of their reasonableness sentence.
You know, I just wanted to mention, Mr. Giampetro, I think even under this circuit's approach to the concept of departures, there are two circumstances where the 5K 1.1 motions are still of great importance in the sentencing process. One of them, naturally, is where there's a statutory minimum, because there's nothing about our jurisprudence that says a district court judge can go below a statutory minimum without following what the statutes require, and sometimes that might be a 5K 1.1 motion. The second is I would certainly not underestimate the importance of a formal statement by the government to that effect, that yes, we've gotten the cooperation we want, and here's our 5K 1.1 motion. You're putting yourself on the record at that point in a very powerful way, saying that you think the reasonable sentence is a lower sentence. So I'm not sure that 5K 1.1 has flown out the window. It just, in our circuit, there's a more flexible approach when you don't have a mandatory minimum.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. And clearly the district courts have always had to rely on the government in terms of its evaluation of the,
sure,
of the value of the defendant's cooperation. And there's no question that that remains true even after Booker. In this case, of course, Judge Griesbach did acknowledge he couldn't grant a 5K motion, but did say as part of his Booker analysis he would consider the cooperation, and he did rely on the government's representations about Miller's untruthfulness and said, I really can't credit that, given all the other things in his record, I can't credit that sufficient to go below the range of 188 months. So with respect to the first request, I think it's not necessary really in this case to force the government to file a 5K because the evidence that Judge Griesbach heard, he considered and decided it wasn't sufficient to go below the range. The second request, the request for an evidentiary hearing, is a bit more problematic and I think runs smack into the problem that Judge Bauer, you were commenting on, which is the discretion that's lodged in the government. I think the Supreme Court in Wade and this court in Zingsheim has made very clear that the evaluation of cooperation is something that resides within the executive branch. And so I think the request that there be an evidentiary hearing is misplaced for two reasons. I guess the folks that would be subject to examination would be Officer Atkinson, the police officer involved in both the state search warrant and then providing information to the government. And the problem with that is it's a little bit unfair for the defendant to ask for that now. He had subpoenaed Officer Atkinson to the sentencing hearing and chose not to put him on the stand. So I think if there were some inconsistencies, and I don't agree that there is an inconsistency between truthfulness about the marijuana grow and untruthfulness about his own cocaine, if there were a contradiction there and it needed to be explored, the defendant could have explored that at sentencing and chose not to. If the evidentiary hearing is for the purpose of putting the prosecutor, Mr. Washington, on the stand, I think that's utterly inappropriate under Wade and under Zingsheim. I think there's no indication that the district court or the defense should be able to root around in the files of the U.S. Attorney's Office, and more specifically, Mr. Washington's mind. I also think the reference to Judge Griesbach's comment in his order denying the motion to supplement the record is a bit unfair for the same reason that he could have presented Officer Atkinson in the sentencing hearing, and any uncertainty about the alleged inconsistency could have been explored at that time and didn't do it. And I think also Judge Griesbach did not have the benefit of a fuller discussion of the law and the facts regarding this alleged inconsistency. So I think it's a little unfair to say because of that comment in the order, we have to this case should be remanded for Judge Griesbach to go down a road that I think under Wade and Zingsheim he's not permitted to do so. With respect to the contractual promise, I think it's clear under this court's precedent that the decision here is not reviewed for bad faith. This is not a situation where the contract required the government to file a 5K motion. It was, as this court has pointed out, totally in the government's discretion. And as Your Honor pointed out, too, there is a certain requirement, obviously, a concern on the government's part that the cooperation be truthful. And if we discover that he's not truthful or feel that he's not truthful, well, of course, our interest in using him in further cases is at an end. And that's what happened in this case. There was no further cooperation. I think given the concession in the brief, the reply brief, that this isn't a challenge to the reasonableness of the sentence, my discussion regarding jurisdiction and the concept of departure is probably obsolete. The remedy the defendant seeks here, I think, is one that he's not entitled to. And for those reasons, the government would ask that the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giampetro. How much time does counsel have? Sir, you have 3 minutes.
I don't think I'll use all that. Just a few things. First, I want to clarify the language in the plea agreement. It states that if the defendant provides substantial assistance to the government in the investigation or prosecution of others, the government in its discretion may recommend a downward departure.
In its discretion may recommend.
In its discretion may recommend. I just wanted to clarify that.
Put you right at the total mercy of the prosecutor, which you were anyway, so it doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference.
I think that this court still can hold the prosecutor to...
Unless there's an unequivocal statement by the prosecutor that this is what they're going to do. And once they say that in our discretion we may, I don't know what we can do about that.
Again, I think it goes back to my interpretation of that as being at least considering it. And I think in the words of the Assistant United States Attorney, I don't think that occurred.
I think he said he considered it, and they considered that he wasn't being candid and telling the truth. It was no longer useful to him, and that was the end of that.
But I think that representation is inconsistent with the officer's representations in state court.
So do you want us to explore the internal workings of the U.S. Attorney's Office or the way they operate, or how do you want us to do it? Or give the court the right to do that?
All I'm asking, I don't know that that's appropriate. All I'm asking, all I'm asking for is that this be reviewed by Judge Griesbach. And to respond to Mr. Giampetro, Judge Griesbach didn't hear all of the evidence here. He made a decision that substantial assistance wasn't warranted.
Were you prevented from bringing any other evidence in? Did you have, was the officer there? Were you there? You weren't there.
Yes, I was
you
there.
Were. Did you bring the officer in?
The officer was there.
Did you put him on?
I did not. I made a proffer to the district court. The United States attorney did not have any dispute with my proffer.
And so the court
that,
was
and
aware.
And at that time, I didn't know about the existence of the search warrant affidavit. Huh. That was found after the sentencing hearing. And I just think that that piece of information needs to be fit in the puzzle before before the judge can make a decision in this case. And I do think that, well, I think that I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. We will take a short recess due to a panel change before hearing the last case. Thank you.
ready to hear argument